Hello everyone, I'm Sarah Ross, and welcome to Her Words, a podcast where we give voice to the stories of women's voices in the United Methodist pulpit. Today, I will be speaking with Reverend Miranda Hornsby, the pastor of discipleship at Conway First United Methodist Church. Miranda is currently pursuing her ordination in the United Methodist Church, and Conway FUMC is her first appointment after graduating from Garrett Evangelical Theological Seminary. First off, can you describe any experience that you had with female pastors before your call to ministry?
I would love to. So it was a tradition at my home church to bring in a woman pastor for United Women in Faith Sunday, or as we called it then, a United Methodist Women. And so as I grew up a pastor's kid, I only heard my dad pretty much preach, except for on these Sundays when we were really intentional about bringing in other female voices specifically. And I remember one year, it was just really meaningful to me. It was one of my dad's coworkers, and Katie McKay Simpson, she's still a clergywoman in the Louisiana Annual Conference, and she came and preached, and it was just like, wow, maybe I could do this. There was just kind of that moment. I was still in my denial phase of my call at this point, but I thought she was really awesome. And it was kind of one of those formative moments of seeing a woman in the pulpit. That was kind of different. Additionally, Reverend J.J. Whitney was mm-hmm. the chaplain at Hendricks College. And I think that was the most extended time I had seen a woman in ministry, because I was getting to be with her and hear her preach every other week when she was a chaplain alongside Reverend Wayne Clark, and then later as she took on that position, it was weekly, and it was a woman-filled office with Reverend Eva Englert Jessen mm-hmm. as well. And so that was a great and formative experience of what does it mean and look like to be a woman in ministry.
Yeah, that's really cool. I really like the intentionality of your dad's church. That's
yeah,
really cool.
Yeah.
So you kind of touched on realizing you could mm-hmm. go into ministry. Can you kind of describe your call to ministry?
Yeah, so I don't think there was ever a moment where I didn't think I could. Okay. As that was never really part of my call journey. As I grew up in the church, people would ask me, and as like I'm in elementary school, are you going to be a preacher like your dad? Wow. And so there was always this seed planted of, oh, I could do this if I wanted to. Now for a decade or so, that answer was like always absolutely not. I am not going to speak in public. I'm not going to do these things. Maybe I'll work in the church. I love the church. It's become this family for me, but I don't want to be a pastor. So fast forward a couple of years, I fell in love with youth ministry and had a kind of a hard time. We had just moved into a new community, and I didn't quite know what my place was. And a youth group was that answer. It was that community. It was my friends, my family, and people who I was, close to and could depend on. And I found myself in those positions, and just found my place there. And I think alongside this, our church did a musical ministry. Mm. And in that particular case, we did Broadway musicals every summer. And that was a time where I got to be in the sanctuary. That's where we had the musicals. So it was in the sanctuary, and that's where we practiced. That's where we sang. That's where we danced. And that's where everyone, a part of the community, acting experience or none, could come and be a part of this production. The fact that it was in the sanctuary is something I reflect on, because that's a kind of an old theater tradition. But for me, that's also where I learned these skills of public speaking. Mm-hmm. It's where I found a place in the church, was in this sanctuary space. So I think that gained a lot of comfort. That fear of public speaking just kind of disappeared. Now, I still didn't want to preach, but but it kind of, I think, planted another seed, if you will, as a part of my call journey. So I went, time to graduate high school, and I was looking at colleges, and mm-hmm. specifically Methodist institutions. As I grew up Methodist, and was looking for a small liberal arts experience. Fell in love with Hendrix, and it just became that place I always came back to. And it was my freshman year, after deciding to go, that I had a couple of very formative call experiences. I was like, I don't know about this ministry thing. Like, okay, there are other options. And I start learning about elder, deacon, missionary tracks, right? I could just be a lay person, very heavily involved. All of these were options I was kind of toying with. And as a United Methodist Youth Scholar, I was asked, Reverend Wayne sent out this email. Mm-hmm. And I was taking this class on the Book of Exodus with Dr. John Sanders. Mm-hmm. And we're studying the burning bush, and I was just like, oh my gosh, I want to be like Moses. I want to be like this person who has committed murder and has been fleeing from his homeland, right? Who doesn't know where he belongs, but you know what he does have? He has a burning bush telling him exactly what to do. I was like, that is what I want. This email that I got from Reverend Wayne was like that burning bush for me. And he was like, would anyone be interested in preaching at our next United Methodist Youth Retreat? And I was like, oh my gosh, I've just got to do this. I was terrified. I didn't know where it would go, but I was like, I won't end up in Arkansas. So if it goes terribly, it'll just, I'll just never return here. Great. Be fine. Now I'm in Arkansas, and I laugh at that. But I loved the process. I loved digging into scripture, and sometimes the academic study can keep you in an academic mindset. And I found that preaching, I held that academic peace in one hand that was so important. And also I found this life and spiritual connection that sometimes in my daily devotion was hard to get to, but preaching really brought that out. I was, mm-hmm. And there was a unique connection with God in that creating process, as well as in the delivery and reflection as the homiletical moment is for the entire congregation, right? Not just one person. And so after that experience, I was like, okay, I'm called to preach. This is obvious. Mm-hmm. I've got to pursue this. And so Hendrix provided a great place to explore options. I did internships, worked at churches. I went back to my home church to think about youth ministry, I worked at Little Rock United Methodist Church downtown and with a deacon there and kind of learned more about that. And I just kind of kept coming back to this call in the midst of the United Methodist Church to order. As we were going through a lot of transitions, it kept coming back to me of, I am an organized person, and we, like, order happens with relationship. It's a very holy experience, and it, you need these organization pieces, you need these relationship pieces so that we can pave the way for this next chapter of what the United Methodist Church is. I think I focus more on order as that's one of the things that elders are called to, in addition to sacraments, which now, of course, deacons and have sacramental rights and authorities with communion and baptism. But that was also very formative for me. I was an intern with the religious life offices at Hendricks, where I prepared the table each week for weekly communion. And I would say before then, I liked communion, and and that was great, but there was something about being called to the table and, you know, us all being welcomed and recognizing we're imperfect people, but able to be reset with God with this holy meal. So wanting to provide that was one of my communion, a couple of like, aha, yes, called to sacraments, called to order. And when I would go off on these tangents and trails, people would of like, are you called to deacon or this or that? And they would be like, Miranda, you're called to be an elder. What are you doing? You know, this kind of callback. So I think that is my call. I think that's like why I'm on the elder track. And so if we look at call a little bit more holistically, there have been moments where I felt a call to get married and a call to come back to Arkansas, and a call to go to Garrett of something at this school and in this place is going to be really formative for me and my development as a person. And I kind of see call, I love my Frozen references, but my, you know, the next right step of where God is calling. And part of the call of an elder, I think, is to constantly be evaluating, well, what is the next right step and where God is calling me, as itinerancy kind of naturally brings that up of, am I still called in this place? What's the vision here? Am I called to another place? And kind of always being open to where God and community are calling you.
Kind of talking about calling, where do you think God is calling you next in your ministry, here at FUMC or just in the larger grand scheme of things?
Sure so currently I'm pursuing a call to ordination. I'm not yet ordained, as I'm still in the provisional period of ministry. And so I do feel called to work on, you know, continuing learning about God and where God is calling me, answering questions and wrestling with those theologically as I'll be interviewed by the Board of Ordained Ministry. So that's like a piece of my call. And then specifically here at Conway First, I've been doing a lot with hospitality this past year that I've been here, and that seems to be working kind of smoothly, I'll put it that way. And so that's been, I think, an achievement of this past year. We've gotten this ministry where we've got people working on it, we've got people who are joining and excited and getting connected to Conway First. But now I think we really need to take that step into outreach. And so how are we bringing more people into the space and sharing that? And so some of that is in the works of how we might have a presence at more community events or kind of get the word out that we're here and we would love to have people come and worship with us, and here's what's going on, and plant those seeds out in the world of what we're doing here.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So as you have journeyed into mm-hmm. becoming a minister, kind of through that discernment of call and then coming into that role and the roles you took on kind of as internships or experiential, and then becoming a pastor here at First Conway, where have you found support? Mm. And then also, where have you maybe found a lack of support or deterrence?
Sure. On my call journey, there's been a lot of support. There's mm-hmm. been people who have affirmed that call, who have said, yeah, you've got this, you can do it. I think there have also been the voices of, don't go into ministry unless you feel like it's the only thing mm-hmm. that you can do. And so I would say that, you know, that question maybe not is deterrent, but it does like make me pause of, well, is there anything else in the world that I feel a call to and would meet a world's need better than this mm-hmm. that I need to be doing, that I need to pursue? If and you know, my answer has kind of been no. I think the role of the church still holds this very important piece of addressing the needs of the world mm-hmm. and in a community that does that with the United Methodist Connection specifically. I think other forms of deterrent were relationships. And mm-hmm. so I was in a relationship in which I kind of expressed, I think I'm thinking about seminary and, you know, maybe going into ministry and what this looks like. And there were a couple of people that was really scary for, mm-hmm. People that I was dating that became a really hard aspect of our relationship and our discernment of is this something you support? Is that an issue of women being in ministry, or is that an issue of like the life of itinerancy, or, mm-hmm. And so what did it mean to date and pursue a call to ministry, uh-huh. which is kind of a hard, at one point, you know, I was on a dating app trying to meet people, and I was like, I'm just going to go ahead and put it out here. And my picture was like me preaching because I'm sick of kind of getting to this point in relationships and people feeling like not being supported.
Yeah.
And then I think with friends, having to justify, yes, the Bible says this. But the Bible also says this, and I feel called, and having to recognizing that this call is something that affects my personal relationships, my friendships, my relationship with my roommate, my, you know, whatever, mm-hmm. whatever it is, those are kind of hard. And those have been like pauses in my deterrent. I think also thinking about women in ministry specifically, you know, I've heard stories and heard experiences. I've now had more of those experiences of, you know, comments about what I wear or what I don't wear or what I do or don't do or how I'm similar or different from perhaps male pastors or other women, as we kind of get expectations in our mind of what that looks like. But I've had several women clergy who have really said, you know, it's a gift to be a woman. We have different skill sets, and those don't always have to be bad, right? Those are gifts, and they're what the church needs, as women have often and historically been leaders in the church, leaders of faith in the family, leaders in the church. We're now getting to a point where it's less of a male-dominated role in many churches, but something that more women are pursuing. And maybe that's what the church needs. And perhaps those are gifts that are often assigned to women, if you will.
Yeah.
So we can get really stereotypical there, but you know, it was said to me a couple of weeks ago that, you know, I've never heard a sermon that mentioned tampons, right? And it's like, well, why not? You know, this is something that UMCOR has gotten behind and has said this is a need both nationally around our country as well as internationally. This is an injustice that's happening. It's affecting people's education, people's health and hygiene, people's life experience and emotional and mental well-being, right? Like, you can name all of these things, and yet we still tax them as a luxury item. So it's like, well, why isn't that being talked about?
Yeah.
That is an issue in our world. It's an issue that the church and people who are called to recognize injustice and oppression in whatever forms they present themselves, we're called to recognize and call out. And so why aren't we talking about it? And if I'm a woman in ministry, maybe that's one of my gifts. I've talked about tampons for most of my life now, and that's a gift that I can bring in some ways. So that, I think that's one area, but I think there are others also, just in terms of relational and priorities and stuff like that, that are also gifts.
Yeah. So you spoke a little bit about how people try and bring up biblical texts to say that women shouldn't be in the pulpit, they shouldn't be pastors.
Sure.
How do you deal with those biblical texts, and how do you see the Bible as supporting your ministry?
Sure. I think biblical passages are things that I still wrestle with. And depending on the day, I can remember the academic scholarship behind some of the passages and be like, oh, this is not what was meant. This is what it's saying. There are other days where, you know, you pick up your Bible and you read, and it's like, those words from Paul still sting.
Yeah.
They still hurt. And, you know, those have been the words used to, you know, slap me in my face or throw me down or denounce this call that, that I am experiencing, that I know that God has on my life. And so, yeah, I think I hold those words, and that is hard. How I deal with that is knowing that God is with me, even in the midst of these words, even in the midst of this human who has a certain worldview. Or a different life experience or whatever it is, recognizing that the Bible has a patriarchal lens, if you will. And so that's there. but God's with me in that, and yeah. that doesn't denounce my call. I just, as we can hold those passages in one hand, I think we can also hold the passages of the times that women are called to ministry in the mm-hmm. Bible and go and do effective ministry, if you will. And I think the Samaritan woman is one that has been really formative for me, as you know, times when I put myself in the shoes of the Samaritan woman, I feel shame. Mm. I feel like I don't have much of a place or worthiness, or I've made mistakes, or I've done this or that, and I bring those with me to this well. And when you encounter Jesus, the takeaway is then this woman going and sharing this word of love and grace, and her entire community then converts, you know. So this unnamed woman is one of the first evangelists, one of the first ministers here. And then I think similarly, you look at Paul and Phoebe, and you research and you learn about Paul, and realize, oh, Paul's actually doing something really progressive. Mm-hmm. You know, he says it in a way that, like, our society needs to unpack that a lot, but he's doing something that takes who can be a part of God's work to the next step. And there is an underlining message of, like, yes, women can. And we see that Paul does that with Phoebe being, you know, sent out and called a minister. So I think recognizing the hurt, I don't think you can just, like, say it's not there. Mm-hmm. And also knowing that God is with you, and remembering all of these moments where God calls and does great things with women. Mm-hmm. And recognizing that that can be done with me.
Yeah, it can. So you've spoken a little bit about, like, how people have treated you as a female pastor. Do you think that there, or can you give word to maybe some of the unique situations that you get entered into as a female pastor that maybe people wouldn't do to a male pastor?
Sure. I think I get asked a lot about children, and so when am I going to have them? Do I want them? Those kinds of things. I don't know that my male colleagues get asked that question as much as I. There are some days that is like, oh, fine, sure, we're curious. Yes, I've been married. Yes, I do want kids one day. And, like, that is part of my life experience. It's part of being in relationship with other humans. But there are also days that I'm like, it can be a little annoying of, like, mm-hmm. well, why are you asking me this question? Is it because you make decisions about, I don't know, decisions or, what does that mean in terms of itinerancy or compensation or time off or, you know, all of these things that the church does have a say in? And in other career paths, there's a little bit more divide in how that might affect a certain setting. Mm-hmm. I've also gotten a number of comments about my heels. So when I wear heels, my looking down on people, or I've gotten told that it makes my calves look really good. Mm. Great, thanks. Also, ew. And I think that's something I'm still kind of working on, how to react and stand up for myself, how to not take things personally, and recognize it's not really about me, it's about them. And also not have, you know, every time I put on a pair of shoes, you know, I want these comments or those comments, and carry that kind of mental load of what to wear on a day and who I'm interacting with and what that puts out as an image for me as a woman pastor.
It's a lot of mental load to have to deal with.
Yeah, yeah.
With that, yeah. Do you have to think a lot about how you present yourself, whether it be how you're speaking, how you're dressing, like the situations where you put yourself in?
Sure, definitely. I think speaking is one that you can have a lot of feedback about, I think, as a woman pastor, either an ability to hear because of and tone. I think there's also who you're used to hearing the word preached from.
Mm-hmm.
And so if as people are particularly new to hearing a woman's voice, I think that can be hard. But where you position your microphone and how you wear it, making sure it's turned on. And I think those are things that I'm very sensitive to, as they help equip projection and mm-hmm. making sure people can hear me when my my voice might be a little bit different than others. I think just in terms of skill, that's something that I've thought about. I've tried different exercises and worked on cultivating so that that projection comes a little bit more naturally mm-hmm. and in a way that, you know, sounds good on a recording even, because mm-hmm. that sounds a lot different. In terms of appearance for other events, I wonder, for a church work day, is it appropriate for me to come in leggings? This is what I would do at my house, or how I would work, mm-hmm. or I would wear shorts for this event. And is that okay? Is that acceptable? You know, and so finding the confidence that, you know, what I do is going to be okay. And it doesn't have to be overthought so much. Recognizing that, like, I guess choosing what comments or conversations I want to have.
Yeah.
And some days it's worth, oh, why do you care? And mm-hmm. some days it's not.
Yeah.
That's something I think about, I guess, reflect on.
Yeah.
Earrings are the other thing that has
really
come up. Yes, because earrings on some mics, or depending on what kind of mm-hmm. earring you have, it might like move a little bit, and so then there's like this weird tapping. So I think for almost a year I didn't wear any earrings on Sunday mornings, just to make sure that it didn't interfere with and like create this tapping noise on my microphone wire. So I think that's been something I've experimented with, of like, well, what earrings work or don't work, or like things that I didn't think about before.
I think I had that experience in that pulpit.
Yeah.
Too. And I was like, oh, darn it. No dangly earrings.
Yes.
In your life of ministry, what do you think your biggest success has been?
My biggest success? So I think success is an interesting Yeah, and an interesting word in terms of ministry. And I think I have grown a lot as a pastor, as part of the continuing ed I've done. Mm-hmm. Preaching, I guess, preaching specifically. I've done a preaching cohort with the Methodist Foundation for Arkansas, where I've gotten to kind of work with some preaching coaches, mm-hmm. and think about some skills a little bit and bring those into the pulpit. So I think that's a personal piece of success, or like I can mark some growth, mm-hmm. In that area. I think other successes would be, I love my Bible study group that I meet with on Wednesday mornings, and we've had some really great conversations of getting to know each other and being there. I think starting new ministries has been challenging, but I'm excited about like the progress that's being made, and kind of, I don't know if I'd count them as successes at this point, but I see high hopes and great progress that's been made. And I hope that in a couple months I would have more confidence in saying, yes, these are my successes. I think graduating seminary was a success. I know some people who realize that, you know, ministry isn't for them. And so I think I'm here, mm-hmm. and I'm trying, and maybe that's considered a success in and of itself. I'll go with that.
I'd say it is. Where have you found the most joy in your ministry?
I think the most joy comes from those relationships of, sitting and having a coffee or going to visit someone, being there for moments of transition in people's lives. And I think those have been some of the most joyous moments, and most meaningful. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what I love most about being a pastor, is those conversations and that time. I think I've also gotten a lot of joy with our capital campaign study that we've written and planned in coordination with our sermon series, and that has been fun to like dive in and discuss with people, and it's brought out a little bit more collaboration, and has been fun to talk about and hear people's thoughts on. That I don't feel like that always happens when you do a curriculum with like a small group. But since the whole church is doing it, it's like, oh, everybody can talk about this and feel really together and connected, if you will.
Where'd y'all get that idea from to do the whole?
Yeah, we got that because we couldn't find anything that we liked. And so Pastor Nathan said, well, let's just write it. Let's do it. And I was like, okay, great. Let's do it. I have never done anything like this before with, you know, videos and the curriculum and the sermon all together, and devotions for prayer that kind of connect to that as well. So yeah, we wanted to make it happen.
Yeah. And you made it happen.
Yeah, we made it happen. So that's a success.
Yeah.
There you go.
Could you speak to a little bit of what it's like to be in a clergy couple?
Yes, I can. So this is both Chad and I's first appointment.
Mm-hmm.
And We got a call on the same day about where we would be placed. So I don't know if that is common for people, but I know oftentimes where the other person is placed affects, you know, where you might be appointed. And we were so excited to be coming back to Central Arkansas. I think as a clergy couple, discerning where we're called has been a lot of our discussion. Mm-hmm. And so at this point, Chad has felt called to smaller churches. And he grew up in a small church and wanted to be a part of that. He grew up in a very rural area. Mm-hmm. I've never lived in a rural area. And so that's something that, well, where do I feel called? And where does he feel called, and kind of balancing that of and this seems to be a really great placement and fit for us because Valonia is a little bit more rural. Mm-hmm. And so Chad feels like he's living into that part of his call of who he's called to be with. And me being at First Conway is a much larger church. And I'm feeling like I am getting to learn some of the skills of working in a larger church. Mm-hmm. And a downtown church that has a lot going on. Mm-hmm. And a lot of connection with the community. And I really love that and feel called to kind of being a part of that. But that is something that we've thought a lot about in terms of, well, where are we called? Where do the places fit? I think there was some discussion around, oh, well, Chad will be the like only pastor at his placement and I'm the associate pastor. Mm-hmm. Well, does that mean they don't think I'm capable or worthy of being a senior pastor or the only pastor? And like recognizing that we have different gifts and different callings and mm-hmm. No, it's a different work that we're doing and that we're called to. And it, you know, in terms of like family planning, we've been married for almost 5 years now and I can't believe it's flown by, but like, so we are talking about having children at some point in our marriage and recognizing that an associate pastor position actually allows a lot more flexibility for taking maternity leave and figuring out how those are filled in, which there's a lot of different ways to do that, but that's something that we have seen and I think would work well at, in terms of like where are we called as a family.
Yeah.
And what kind of helps us live into that.
Yeah. One final question is there anything you would like to share with the next generation of female pastors that are coming up? Any words of wisdom or just encouragement?
Yeah.
Just whatever.
You can do it. Yeah, it's kind of weird. I feel like I'm not even to the ordained part to be offering wisdom for the next generation. I'm still seeking so much wisdom myself of what it means to be a clergywoman. I do think like just general encouragement to pursuing and following your call. And I believe in you personally, Sarah. But any clergy woman who's thinking about a call, I recommend trying it and like going for it. And when you get to those either parts of the Bible or what people say, to know that God is with you in that. And dig deeper. Mm-hmm. I think that's so important. I also think there's something about the community of clergywomen in general that I'm learning is really important. And so I think as professionals in American society, there mm-hmm. is a natural tendency to be competitive. Mm. When you're working in a system of itinerancy and, you know, discerning this call and trying new things, I think it's also, it can be competitive. And there are times where you can bring another person down or denounce someone else's ministry. And I think we're called to take a higher road, mm-hmm. To build each other up, to be with each other in the midst of those circumstances and approach with more curiosity than judgment, as new generations are trying things and doing them differently than the generations that have gone before us. And so how can we do that and create that in our culture and in our like solidarity as clergy women specifically?
That's really beautiful.
Yeah. Thanks. Great. Yeah. I hope that's helpful.
It is.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for talking with me and sharing your experiences.
Yeah.
I feel like I've gotten to know you better.
Good.
And I already knew you a little bit.
Yeah. I'm glad you asked me to interview and share some of my experiences. Thanks, Sarah.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of Her Words. If you would like to hear more stories of women in the ministry in the United Methodist Church, check out our other episodes.